When women sign up on our website, gritandgracegirls.com, for the podcast in their inbox every week, they receive a set of 12 permission slips to help them learn to break bad rules, as we say around here.
And sometimes they even email us and share their struggles with perfectionism, people-pleasing, and figuring out how to be an HSP, a highly sensitive person in a pretty insensitive world.
And we really love hearing from you because then we know we're not the only ones who struggle. One listener wrote this to us: a very loud voice constantly echoes in my mind that I'm not doing enough for God, that I'm not living but watching by the sidelines and will die having missed the ride, and that I can't figure out who I am even after all these decades of life.
Oh, you know, just listening to you read that, I can feel that panic rising in my own chest. Do you think this is something that just older women wrestle with?
Does 50 count as older? Because that's my upcoming birthday. Well, I may be in the older category now, but I'm just glad I'm still growing. Those pain points our listener pointed out are good news because it means we're still growing.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules.
Today, we're talking with Crystal Evans Hurst, author of She's Still There, Rescuing the Girl in You. Crystal is a writer, speaker, and worship leader, in addition to serving as the chief executive operating officer in her home as a wife, mother of five, and grandmother to one.
Crystal firmly believes God's promise in Jeremiah 29:11, I know the plans that I have for you. And today, she is here to help you believe and apply that truth to your life.
Well, so Crystal, I am months away from a significant birthday. I'm turning 50 this year. And so I'm so in love with the title of your new book, She's Still There, Rescuing the Girl in You. Tell us about the title.
It was an accident, actually. I was on the phone with a publisher and they were asking me, you know, what do you want to write about? And I was rambling on. And in the passing of a sentence, I just said, you know, I just want to remind every woman that the girl she wanted to be, that she never knew she could be, that she thought, you know, the time was past for her to be, that that girl is still there. They were like, ooh. So it was kind of that kind of thing. But I'll tell you that when my daughter, who is now 25, was 19, and I don't remember the decision that she was facing, but she was really just overwhelmed with the choice that she had to make and couldn't figure out what to do. And I remember having a conversation with her and telling her, I said, this is going to sound very Oprah-ish, but you need to remember a point, if there is a point, where your girl felt good about her life. Like, what was it that made her feel good? What was it that she was excited about? What was it that she was passionate about? I said, it could be when you were 10. It could be when you were 16. It could be whatever. But what was that? Why don't you reconnect to that person and ask her, what would she do right now with the decision that she has to make? We carry with us life experiences, and sometimes that's baggage. Sometimes it's not. But we find ourselves in places, I think, where we're totally disconnected with the clear choice or decision that the best of the girl in us would make. Now, that girl could be a past girl, or it could be the dream of the girl. You know, the person that I want to be, what would she do right now? You know, I have to make that decision every time I go to Panera and I'm looking at those chocolate chip cookies. What would the girl who I'm wanting to be do right now? Would she add it on for 99 cents or would she skip it? And so it came from her, and I said, you know, what would your girl tell you to do? And I said, well, get with her and ask her. So it was kind of an outgrowth of a couple of different things, but because we all refer to each other as girl, you know, girl this, girl that, girl, you know, get your act together, the girlfriend. I just thought women will identify with that. They'll know what it means. And we say, she's still there, rescue the girl in you. And who's that girl? Well, maybe you lost her. Maybe you never arrived. Maybe you've just forgotten. Maybe you never knew. You just lost hope and you never even knew who that person could be. It doesn't matter. That girl, the best of who you were supposed to be, she is still there.
So good.
It's totally resonating with me. You know, it's strange to be almost 50 and trying to figure out who I am. And yet at the same time, I'm grateful for the opportunity. A lot of people never get the chance.
That's the wonderful thing, I think, about this concept. And I thought it was for me, but I'm finding it's really for so many. that it doesn't matter if you're 20, like my daughter was, or if you're 50. We ask this question, and for most of us, we've probably asked this question, you know, where is that girl? We've asked it multiple times for different reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, I asked this question as a 25-year-old who was recovering from a really difficult relationship break. I asked this question as a 30-something-year-old mom who was so sick of changing dirty diapers. I've asked this question when I turned 40, just because I turned 40. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we ask ourselves these questions for different reasons in different seasons. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is just time-based. Sometimes it is situation-based or relationship-based. And I think the great thing is we can be comfortable with asking the question mm-hmm. because we're always a work in progress and we're always discovering something about ourselves we didn't know. So when we realize that there's some kind of disconnect, or as I like to say, cognitive dissonance, what I expect is not what is, that we're free to ask that question, to seek out the answer, and then to realign or recalibrate our lives accordingly. And that's part of living, that it's a part of the journey.
There's so much grace in that, that it's a process, because even reading through a little bit of your book and looking at the chapter titles and that kind of thing, I kind of still, until you just said that, was thinking of it as a one-time reconnection. So thanks for giving us the grace to be in process.
No, it's like your internet connection. You know, sometimes for no reason at all, you just realize it's not connecting. So, you know, you may turn off your Wi-Fi and turn it back on. And we don't, you know, and if it happens too much, that's problematic. But if it happens every once in a while, you just know that it's a part of the glitch of technology. And because it is what it is, you just fix it and then you move on. And I think that's how we have to look at our life. As a part of living, sometimes there's just a glitch. So you do what you got to do to recalibrate and then you just move on. It's not the end of the world. It doesn't mean it's not working or it doesn't exist. You just fix it and you move on.
Oh, for reforming perfectionists, that is radical. Thank you.
Okay, well, we've got you for like 3 hours, right? Because I just want to keep listening and listening. I can't even tell you the notes I'm taking. I'm joking. I know we have time limit here. All right, well, you probably know that our podcast is aimed towards women who are like us, reforming perfectionists and people pleasers. And so chapter 4, Good Girl, His Girl, really stood out. And I'm going to read a portion where you describe yourself. And I'm like, yes, yes, yes. I was smart, a straight-A student, and usually the teacher's pet. As a teenager, I was a good girl by all standards, and I liked it that way. I was proud to know that I pleased my parents and myself by doing things well. I was focused, in charge, maybe a bit bossy at times. I knew what was important, and I ran hard after those things. So how did that description change by the end of your high school years, and how did that change happen?
Well, I think, and maybe this isn't the right thing to say, but this is how I feel today. So y'all are the perfection recovery experts, so correct me if I'm wrong. I think that while you can learn to recognize your tendency, and while you can learn the actions that you take to combat your tendency, largely your tendencies remain your tendencies. You know, you can practice and get better at it. But, you know, just our DNA, the way we're carved on the inside in our heads and in our hearts, we just kind of have a leaning. Mm. So when you ask me, how did that change? A lot of it, honestly, has not changed. I've just gotten really good at fixing it or correcting the glitch. Mm. I've got a lot better at recognizing when a glitch is coming. Mm. And that was a major glitch, you know, in my life, to keep using that terminology. And because it was a public glitch, it was not a glitch I could hide. I mean, it was part of what I think has helped me to learn to love the skin that I'm in, mm-hmm. is that when you are forced to learn to love it because you can't hide behind a mask, you have a choice at that point. You can either go crazy and live your life in shame, or you just say, well, it is what it is. And so, you know, I'm going to do the best I can because I can't hide. So a part of what happened then was that I couldn't hide. You know, no, I'm actually not the good girl that you guys thought I was. And I actually don't always make good decisions. And so what I learned to adopt then, that I have been forever grateful to continue to live under the banner of, is the beauty of God's love and grace and mercy for me. And that regardless of what I do, there is a value that I have despite my actions. Now, my actions totally, the decisions that I make, they totally affect my fellowship with God. They affect the consequences, good or bad, that I live with, but they don't affect my value. Now, that is a concept that I have had to continue to repeat to myself because of my leaning and because of my tendencies. But it is a truth that I learned in my early 20s that I have hung on to for dear life the whole rest of the ride.
So beautiful. Well, okay. So Crystal, we're going to talk about the elephant in the room, which is you talk about your family a lot in this book. So any of our listeners who may not have met you yet, tell us about your family.
So I'm married to Jesse, 16 years. We have 5 children. We're a blended family. When we got married, each one of us brought a girl and gave a girl as a gift to each other on our wedding day. We added 3 boys after that. So our kids range from girls 25 and 21 right now to boys that are almost 14, 12, and 8. So I have a lot going on, and my oldest daughter is married and she has a daughter. So I'm a grandmother as well. We have a lot going on.
The cutest thing. Y'all need to follow Crystal on Instagram and see pictures of that sweet baby.
So yeah, we have a lot going on, and it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun.
Well, and the family that you were born into too had such an influence. When I was reading through chapter 4, you talked about these bad decisions that you made as drift. And so how did the values that had been instilled in you by your parents feel when you were drifting? And how did those embedded beliefs help you find your way back to the girl that you had wanted to be?
So my parents are Tony and Lois Evans. My dad has faithfully served as a senior pastor of the church he founded for 40 years. You know, I'm a church girl. When I think about my story and people ask me the question, you know, why do you think you drifted? I always think about Eve, and I think about the fact that she was the first woman in creation, and she had the perfect father and the perfect setup and the perfect husband, because they both, you know, had been set up just so well. But because they were human and God gave them the greatest gift that he could ever give, which is the freedom to choose, they chose to not obey. They chose. And if she had, with the perfect setup, with the perfect daddy in the perfect situation, could make an independent, incorrect decision, then so can we all. So we always face the reality of the opportunity that we have to make choices, and I'm no different. But when I was making those choices, and, you know, and I talk in the book a lot about why those happened. And I think, you know, Satan is really good. He's been doing what he's been doing for a long time, and he knows what I think he observes us, and he knows what our tendencies are. And then allows life to present opportunities to us in a certain way where we have to make choices. And if we're not on guard, you know, the Bible talks about being ready for battle. If we're not ready for battle and totally guarded with truth, we could so easily be guided or misguided away. So that's kind of what happened. But in that circumstance, I mean, it was huge cognitive dissonance. I mean, there was huge, I mean, whenever you are acting in a way that is not consistent with your upbringing or your belief system, it creates that. But we override that because there's something more that we think we want. So we kind of quiet down the voices that are trying to speak to us, the Holy Spirit in us, our conscience, we shh to those because there's something that we're focused on. And wherever your eyes lead, your feet follow. And so I just think that's totally what happened. But the goodness of God is that as soon as we turn our eyes back to him, he says, seek and you will find. Draw near to me, James 4:8, and I will draw near to you. He doesn't move. We turn our eyes back towards him. To, you know, turn your eyes upon Jesus. Yeah. And the things, everything else grows strangely dim in the light of his beauty and grace. So as soon as I made the decision to turn my eyes back, he'd never moved. He was waiting for me. Since then, every time, because none of us are perfect, he's consistently been there, again, showering love, grace, and mercy as I learned to be faithful.
So beautiful. Well, Sherry and I both were talking before we talked to you this morning that your voice in the book is so engaging. You're so vulnerable. You're so real. And you're also so funny. I mean, I found myself laughing out loud. So thanks for all of that.
I'm so glad to know that because in my family, you know, my parents have 4 kids. I'm the oldest of the 4. Don't tell anybody I told you that, but I get away with murder because I'm told I have a baby face. Now you know, right? I'll be 50 in not too long. But, you know, I'm the one that was not funny. And when I would try to be funny, like my brother would, like everybody be quiet. And then my youngest brother would go, brr, 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 like the crickets. You can hear the crickets because you're not funny right now. So when you say that to me, like, I am so happy. Like, I am so happy that it wasn't like, funny.
You have sharpened your funny bone.
The Hershey bar with almond story. You just had me hook, line, and sinker. And just the way you drew it out, because I was there every step of the way. And I'm like, oh, she's on to me. Oh, she's in my head. But I think the beauty of that one is we all have our Hershey bar with almond. And I'm now willing to listen to anything you say because you're not coming at me from a top-down, you know, preaching at me. You've been there. Clearly, you've been there. You've had the similar thoughts I've had, and you now have, at least I'm going to give you the authority to tell me whatever you need to tell me, which leads to the next question. In She's Still There, you give 6 steps for finding our way back. And I love that phrasing. Finding our way back just sounds so inviting. And so you've got fight for your life, look at your life, embrace your life, develop your life, encourage your life, and choose your life. And since I'm a total nerd, I actually searched the ebook for the word choose, and you use it like a billion times. So choice must be a really, really important thing for you. So tell us a little bit about these 6 steps. And part of what we're doing right now is a series on grit. And it seems like grit and choice go real closely together. So talk about that.
So there's a journey. And if you can think back to the story, and I tell the story in the book of the girl who fell down the well, yes. Little Jessica, mm-hmm. There's a progression when you are rescuing someone. The first thing is you realize they need rescuing and you have to make the decision to be engaged in that rescue process. And so when that little girl fell down into the well, of course, everybody wanted her to live and they fought to save her. But what we need to recognize is that when we're the person that's down at the bottom underneath, we have to be willing to fight for ourselves. Like, it's not anyone else's job. I mean, and sure, people should encourage you and they should love on you. And in the body of Christ, as sisters in Christ, we should reach out and give a hand. But we all know that if there's someone who needs help and they don't want to help themselves, there's really nothing you can do for them. Mm-hmm. So as an individual, you have to be willing to fight for your own life. But in order to do that, you have to be willing first to assess the situation. Why am I here? So that's the second section of the book. Look at your life. Like, what is going on around me? What can I use? What hands are extended for me to get myself out of here? You know, what is here for me to access? How long can I last? You know, or do I need to move? Like, what is the assessment of the situation? Before you can bring in the cranes to rescue baby Jessica, you got to know, if I put this down in the ground, is everything going to come crumbling down around? You have to look at it to know what you're working with. And a lot of people don't want to look at their lives. They just want to move forward. But what happens is when we don't look, and I'm not a person who says, you know, stay in counseling over the same thing for 30 years. I'm just like, you know, you got to look, but then you got to move forward. You know, we don't want to get stuck looking. But if you never look, that stuff you don't look at will come back to bite you. So I just think you have to take the time to look. The third thing is embrace your life. Is whatever you find, it is what it is. You know what I mean? And it is what it is. And so if your pain is your pain, it is what it is. If your joy is your joy, it is what it is. If your history is your history, it is what it is. So all of it, the good parts, the parts we love to talk about, and the bad parts, the parts we wish had never happened, it's a part of what makes you you. The gifts that God gave you, the abilities he's enabled you with, the interests, your passions, your unique personality. Like, we spend so much time wishing we were other people, or wishing we had other people's talents, or wishing that we didn't have a certain history, or wishing that we had somebody else's husband. Embrace your life, you know, because you're not going to move forward until you're willing to do that. Develop your life. Now, the book is like the first 3 chapters. I'm rubbing you like a friend on the back. Like, it's going to be okay. Cry it out. Let me encourage you. And then the last 3 sections of the book are like, all right, now get up. We got to get up.
Little kick in the tushy.
Exactly. Develop your life is about the focus that you need to live your life and what's involved with that, making a decision, having a direction, you know, exercising discipline, all those things. It's the mechanics of what it means to get yourself out of the ditch. Encourage your life is when you are doing the disciplined work, the developmental work, you do get tired. You get tired. So be your own cheerleader. And many times we want other people to encourage us and we won't encourage ourselves. What does it mean to coach your life? How do you do that? I walk you through that. And then choosing your life is the fact that, you know, this whole progress is a wheel and it turns. You realize that you want to move. That's the first 3 sections. But then the last 3 sections, it takes discipline to move. You got to develop your muscle to move. You got to encourage yourself to keep moving. But here's the rub. You're going to have a point in your life, and we all do, multiple times. where you're just not going to want to. And the only thing that separates you from continuing to go and stopping where you are is the choice. And that's why you hear that word repeated a million times, because none of this works, none of it, if you don't wake up every day and choose the small steps, the small things that you can do to keep your life moving forward.
Well, and that so leads me to ask you about your podcast, because I really was oblivious to podcasts until Sherry asked me to co-host a podcast. And then I was like, oh, I should listen to Crystal's session from She Speaks. And that's where I started. So I recently started listening to your podcast, and I love it because it's very practical how to make choices every day to make your life into what you want it to be. It's fantastic. Talk to us about your favorite thing about podcasting.
Is it's faster than writing.
Yes, girl. Amen.
Kind of, sort of. I mean, if you do the whole thing from start to finish yourself in the editing and the graphics and all that, then maybe not. In terms of content driven, I mean, and I've done, you know, I said this in my podcast class, you know, if I sit down and write on a good day, you know, on an overflow day, in 30 minutes, you know, maybe I'm going to get out 2,500 words, maybe. You know, podcasting, if I'm flowing, oh my gosh, that's 7,000 to 10,000 words. You know, like you could write a book in a week. So in terms of just the speed at which you can communicate, and then the flexibility with it, you know, people can, they don't have to sit and look, you can listen while you're doing other things or while you're riding in the car. So I love it for those reasons. I will have to say it has made me lazy with writing. And one of my goals this year is to be just as consistent with my writing voice as I am with my speaking voice, because I think that it's a different muscle, but it's just as important.
You're in my ears while I'm doing a Couch to 5K app. So good. There you go.
Good. I've done that. I need to do it again. Because when you don't use it, you lose it, honey.
Yes, indeed.
I love it. All right. Well, wrapping up here, what final words of encouragement would you leave with our listeners who are, they are listening to you and they're like shaking in their perfectionistic boots and their people pleasing boots. And some of our listeners are highly sensitive people who want to make better choices, but it's hard. So what closing words of encouragement would you have?
So the beauty of choice is that it doesn't matter if it's a major life choice or what we would consider to be minor. For instance, every step that I take, if I want to walk from here to my mailbox outside of my front door, every step that I take moves me toward the mailbox. It doesn't matter if it's a 1-inch step or if it's a 1-foot step. Every step moves me forward. And part of the beauty of understanding that your choices can be small or large is that even if you are a perfectionist, a recovering perfectionist, or a people pleaser, any step that you make, however small it is, moves you forward. And so if you can just say, you know, man, I wish I wasn't so perfectionistic, or I wish I wasn't such a people pleaser, I'm doing it again. But okay, this time today, I released myself from this. Maybe I, you know, the person asked me to do something and maybe I felt the need to say yes, but my small step forward was I said, you know what? Can I call you back? Can I think about it and pray about it? And maybe you still felt it. Maybe you still did it, but you know what? You built the muscle of putting distance between you making a decision. That is progress. You know, if you're a perfectionist and you realize that you're feeling anxiety rise because you had a list of 20 things on your to-do list today and you only got to two, well, you know what? And then tomorrow you say, okay, I'm gonna write 3 things down and I'm not gonna worry about the other 17. Okay, well, even if you felt the anxiety of the other things you didn't do because you feel like you need to get all these things done, guess what? You made progress because you didn't create such a high bar to meet. So sometimes I think we confuse the feelings of whether or not we're progressing, the doubt of progress, with the reality of progress. And so I think that if we can just say to ourselves, any step that I make, anyone, no matter how small or how big, is moving me forward, and then pat your own self on the back for that, I think that is encouragement that we all need and that anybody can use. And that even if you still have the anxiety or you're struggling with the steps that you want to take that are bigger, you can give yourself recognition for doing that one thing. And I do talk a lot about that book. Sometimes doing one thing is all you've got. But the great news is that for today, doing that one thing is all you need.
Head on over to gritandgracegirls.com/episode63.
You'll find links to this week's Digging Deeper download, Bible verse art, and transcript.
We so appreciate the reviews our listeners have been leaving on iTunes. If you haven't had a chance to leave one yet, you'll find a link on the webpage for this episode.
Be sure to join us next week when we'll be processing together what we learned from our time with Crystal.
for today. Grow your grit. Embrace God's grace. And when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and break it.